Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show, where business owners, professionals, and entrepreneurs gather to discover playmaking ideas for success. Your host is internationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author, Steve Klein, who sits down with fascinating playmakers who have made themselves and their company successful. Steve will introduce you to CEOs and executives who discuss their playmaking path toward success. And now, it's time to meet this show's playmaker. Here's your host, Steve Klein.
Albert Einstein said, "Anyone who has never made a mistake has never tried anything new." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today is a guest who tries new things. Today's Playmaker helps small business owners build great companies. With us today is a president whose four companies generate over $1 billion a year. This great Playmaker is Matt Monero. Matt is CEO of Commercial Fleet Financing. Now, Matt combines his business brilliance with more than 20 years of hands-on experience in transportation equipment finance. Today, he's a CEO leading four companies that generate over $100 million per year in business with a base of more than 10,000 clients. CFF has become a market leader in equipment financing for the trucking, towing, construction, and moving industries. Matt launched his first business, Commercial Fleet Financing, in 1995 with a phone, a folding table, and the unyielding confidence of a single client, a trucker. Fast forward 20 years, Commercial Fleet Financing made Inc. Magazine Top's 5,000 list of fastest-growing companies in America in 2014. Matt is the creator and personality behind RoadGrit TV, the first and only online video network featuring original programming for and by innovators, operators, movers, and shakers of the transportation industry. We're going to have fun with this one. Matt, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Steve, thank you. My pleasure. I look forward to it.
Well, we're going to have fun, as I said. First question, what brought you from Darien, Connecticut, to Dallas?
It's a mixture of things. A stint at cooking school in Providence, Rhode Island, then a move to Washington, D.C., where I learned to sell, hated it, moved out to California, rode a bicycle from the base of the Golden Gate Bridge all the way down Pacific Coast Highway to Mexico.
That's a dream come true for a lot of people.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was a wonderful trip, 800 miles. And sleeping, I had no tent, no sleeping bag, nothing, just a bike, and then I ended up finding a job. Strange twist of coincidence, but I ended up finding a job in the equipment finance industry, and that company transferred me to Dallas, Texas. And when I got to Dallas, Texas, everything we agreed upon had changed, the budget, the dream, the goal, and I was basically left in a dumpy one-bedroom apartment. When I moved to Dallas in 1995, I didn't have a friend of a friend. I knew no one, zero. I didn't know who I could call who might know somebody. And I was left for dead here by that company, and I left and started a Commercial Fleet in November of 1995, from that one-bedroom dumpy apartment. Didn't have two nickels to rub together. And basically all my customers left me, and I was stuck on my own. I had one customer in Greenville, Texas, who stayed with me, and his name was Bobby Whitfield. And I would call him, and I would say, "Bobby, it's over. I'm busted. I'm going to go work for a bank." And he would say, "You're my finance guy. I'm going to buy another truck. You're going to finance it, and you're going to make it." And he did that over and over and over for me. Yes. And I made it because of him.
That little seed that kept it going. Otherwise, we'd have been calling you Chef Matt.
or I'd be a loan officer in a cubicle at Wells Fargo. I mean, truly, it's amazing how people drop into your lives at certain times. I haven't had a lot of those people, but Bobby Whitfield, the trucker from Greenville, Texas, was certainly one of those guys for me.
But you've also used circumstances in your favor, too. I mean, here you are stuck in Dallas, don't know what you want to do, you don't know anybody. There was an idea that came to you, and you made it work.
Yeah, that was built in for me. I mean, my real dad left my mother and I when I was 6 months old. And I never spent a lot of time thinking about that. But in reality, that really set the seed for who I was, and the idea of being alone and being left was akin to me very early. I know that sounds weird. You don't know it at 6 months old, but I'm telling you, I knew it very early on that things would be different for me and that the need of having a support group was not going to be important for me because it was taken from me when my old man left so early. I never saw him again. I never heard from him again. I never met him. I never heard boo from him again. He left us high and dry. But that seed was set. And the crazy part is even today I don't have that need. I'm 19 years married. I have three incredible children. I'm insane about them, crazy for them. But I also know deep down that I'm good. I'm good alone.
And you're not lonely.
Who said it best? If you like the person you're with, you're never alone.
And you like yourself.
I very much like myself.
and it's not that you want to be by yourself all the time, but you have no problem being by yourself.
I don't.
Because you've surrounded yourself with some good people, which we're going to talk about too. One of your four companies is Commercial Fleet Financing, which you started in 1995. That's the one that got you going. What do you do?
We finance heavy commercial equipment, big rigs, bulldozers, tow trucks. We finance for good credit, small to medium-sized businesses on a nationwide basis. So Bubba the trucker, who's got a 700 credit score and five trucks in his fleet, who's been in business 5 years, is our ideal customer. We don't do bad credit. We don't do startups. We're not trying to help a guy leave his secure job at the post office and buy a tow truck and see if it works. That's not our client. Our clients are small business owners who have proven that they know how to run a small business well, and we want to help them get bigger.
So apparently these are not large fleets. They're a smaller fleet, six to a half dozen to a dozen.
Yeah, I mean, our typical customer is under $25 million a year in revenue. So you're talking somewhere in the 100 units in the fleet and below range. And there's lots of those out there. There's 3.5 million truckers in the United States. And there's an unending amount of business for us.
So if I wanted to become a trucker, I want to buy my own rig, are you the one to come to?
You would not, because we don't do startups. So again, I'm not interested in helping Steve leave the training and broadcasting business to go into the trucking business. I don't roll the dice on that guy. I bet on proven business operators who aren't large. But have a desire to be larger, or if they're comfortable with the size they are, they just need to replace their equipment, and we want to be their finance company.
Well, let's talk about the real business you're in, because I talked to you before the show started about your mission, and your mission is to basically help build these companies. You're not in the finance business. You're not in the credit business. Talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, our mission statement is very clear. It says CFF exists to help ourselves and our clients reach our full potential through expertise, expectations, and gratitude. That is the mission statement that I run the company by, period, end of story. If you really start to extract what that means, I want to help clients and ourselves internally and externally. Reach our full potential. So we have to understand what that is, which is we want more. That's a key component. And we do it in three areas. I need expertise. Our company must get great at what we do. Therefore, every new person we have has to have that desire. Through expectations, we're going to tell you what our company expects of you, both internally and externally. And I need you to live up to those expectations. And then when you do that, we're not going to say we appreciate you, and we're not going to say we're thankful for you. We're going to use the word grateful, and I think it's a much different word. When I say to you, I'm grateful for our time together today, Steve, it's different than I say, hey, thanks for your time. It's just a different word that doesn't get used often, and when you use it properly, it stops people in their tracks. It's different. And so, by the way, that mission statement is after 20 years of just beating this place.
Well, let's talk about that, because you mentioned those three things, which should be understandable. That's the way you should run a business. But that's not the way you ran your business 20 years ago up into about a year or so, a couple years ago.
It's not.
How did you run your business?
I started from zero. I mean, I literally nothing. I had no idea how to build a business. I had no business plan. All I knew how to do was cold call, find customers, work real hard for those customers. And I set a number. But the reality is this. I would go home and my wife would say, I'm going to, you think after Friday you work real hard, your wife gives you a big hug and a kiss. Right? It wasn't like that in my house. I would come home, my wife would say, did you pay yourself today? And I would lie and lie and lie and lie. And I remember one day I said no. And she went crazy and said, did you pay your employees? And I said, yes. And her head spun. And she said, how could you do that to us? And meaning her and our boys. And she said, one day you're going to realize it, Matt. One day you're bigger than your business. One day you will realize that. And I remember after hearing that multiple times that I remember saying, I'm going to do two things. I'm going to build a $100 million company. I'm going to shut my wife up. And I did. I did both. And, you know, we can joke about it. My wife never asks me, did I pay myself, right? That's long been handled. But the piece, that $100 million piece, I had no plan. I just gritted, beat it out of me and everybody around me. I beat it out of the marketplace to get there. And we got there in 2014, and it was a wonderful moment. But I also knew that once we got there, I knew that we had a very unstable company. I just knew foundationally it was a mess. Culturally, it was a mess. We had people all doing their own deals. There was no standardization. It was just a mess. And I made the commitment to change that in late 2015 and all of 2016, and it was a big deal. We probably lost 50% of our employees. We probably took a $30 million funding hit, which in our world translates to millions of dollars in operating cash flow. And it was very tough. And I'm very glad we did it. I'm tickled pink about it because it was a wonderful test for me and the organization. The organization has survived. I wish everyone who left the best. I really do. Even though some left to go start their own businesses, I wish them the best too because I love competition, right? We have an amazing office manager, our VP of Ops, who runs the office, and she says, listen, if somebody can leave our company and hurt us, it's not shame on them. It's shame on us. And isn't she right?
And competition makes you better. You mentioned before the show started about building it right. Is that what you mean by what you just explained to us about your business?
Anybody listening should take the time to understand what the core values, what the mission statement is on day one. Because otherwise you end up with Superman complex, right? Nothing works without me or maybe my assistant, right? Without the two of us, this place will fall apart. That's a horrible culture. Or you end up with side deals, which is completely horrible to the organization. Well, you know, Bobby's been here a long time, and I know he hasn't hit his number in a half a year, but we're not going to give him a pay cut. And you end up with all these different side deals, and those side deals become just fodder. They become fuel for gossip and erosion of the culture. I once read, I wish I could find it again to figure out who said it, but I believe it's under the topic of transformational leadership. And the guy said that when the organization gets between 3% and 15% of scuttlebutt, of dissension, the whole thing can flip on its head. And I completely agree with that.
It becomes cancerous.
It becomes and so think about it. 3% to 15% is still a low percentage of cancer in the organization, but it can flip it on its head.
It spreads very quickly.
It spreads very quickly,
as I know. Absolutely right. Well, you have other businesses too. The one that I want to talk about first is one that tells us why you're so good in commentary on the show is Road Grit TV. What is that?
Well, we created our own network, our own online digital network called Road Grit TV. It first started at CFF Nation, and then we did a deal with Apple TV, in which they now take some of the content and put it on our channel there. And they made the suggestion of, you know, we don't think CFF Nation tells the story. And they said, we highly recommend you change the name of the network. And so we went to our customers and said, what do you like? And we gave them five or six choices, and they came back and said Road Grit TV, and that's what we went with. So we have our own shows in which personalities that can deliver a message that benefits the transportation industry get their platform seen. We charge nothing for it. It's free. Our company eats the cost of it. It probably costs us $100,000 a year. Yes, I could sell banner advertising. Yes, I could do some other thing. I don't want to do any of that. It's a give back to the industry. But let's be frank about it. It's an attention grab for commercial fleet, because for every video you watch, you got to watch an 8-second video about commercial fleet's financing. So,
and it comes back to you in other forms.
It does. I mean, it comes back in goodwill, but it also comes back in notoriety and exposure and discussion points. So, you know, for the audience who's still afraid to toot their own horn or to leverage a giveaway for, you know, Gary Vaynerchuk calls it a jab, 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 right hook. I mean, if we spend our life jabbing, Steve, and we never throw the right hook, then how do we get paid for the jab? Sooner or later, you got to get paid for the jab.
That's absolutely correct. Well, let's talk, you were talking grit, and your first book is called The Grit, The Only Thing You Need to Know to Make Millions. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that, but also tell us about the other books you wrote and the one that's upcoming from mm-hmm. Penguin Books.
The Grit is not an autobiography. It's just some standard business practices that I have put in place that have worked. I had someone from Canada tell me, and I can't remember the name of what they call them, but in the United States we call them Cliff Notes, right? The quick reads. Mm-hmm. And she referred to it as the Cliff Notes of business. And I thought that was a wonderful review.
Well, this looks like a quick read.
It's less than an hour read. It's 100 and something pages. It really, in my opinion, tells you everything you need to know about how to set up a business, how to build a company culture, how to do it right. It talks about a lot of the mistakes I made. And then we have a number of other booklets that go out to the industry for trucking, towing, construction, moving. But then the new book that I have is called I Need More Money, and it was the agent on it was Dupree Miller. They handle Tony Robbins. They handle Joel Osteen, Dr. Phil, all that stuff. And they sold the rights of the book to Penguin Random House, which was a big deal. They tell me I don't know what I don't know in that regard, you know? They tell me 97% of the books that get presented to Penguin Random House get turned down, and I got it on my first shot.
And you didn't know you didn't know.
I didn't know what I didn't know. But here's what I did know. I know that everybody needs more money. And I know that money is an epidemic. Lack of money is an epidemic. And I saw it firsthand when my wife and I lost her brother 2 years ago. He died at 46 with no health insurance, no life insurance, and $100 in the bank. And he left a wife and four kids. And that was the ultimate wake-up call for me that said, even though I've had some financial success after, you know, a long time of no success, when's enough? What is it? What is enough? So it's a story of two sides. How does a guy work 20 years and have nothing to show for it? And the pain that causes on his deathbed, right? Because really, really what he's dealing with is fighting the disease of cancer but he's also fighting the guilt of the knowing that if he doesn't pull it out, that he is going to leave his family with zero. And then the other side is what is in a position where you can come, where my wife and I were in a position to come in and remove that guilt, right? I remember looking him straight in the eye and saying, you don't have to worry about that anymore, right? That money piece is gone. I got that. It's an incredibly powerful situation, right?
Yes, obviously it affects you a lot. This, you put your heart and soul in this book.
This is a big book because of the pain that it caused. Really, to my wife, even more so than me. I mean,
this is her brother. This is her blood.
They were so unbelievably close. If you had to pick the worst possible person to leave her life, even more so than me, and I'm even going to go and say even more so than my children, it was to take him. That's how important he was to her and her to him. And so I wrote the book about it. And it's a powerful book that I hope becomes a wake-up call for everybody that says, do not get complacent. We need more money. Just because the bills don't come on pink slips anymore and you can take your wife out to Bob's Chop House doesn't mean you've made it. There's a much bigger number. And then the other aspect of it, Steve, is that the money's moved. We're still chasing these old numbers. When I graduated college in 1991, to be in the top 1% of earners, you had to make $100,000. Take a guess what that number is today.
Have no idea.
It's $384,000. And how many people do we know that are still chasing $100,000 as if it's a meaningful number? The meaningful number from 1991 is almost four times that number.
What's
now
interesting, I think the average family, that family of four, is in the, what, $50,000, $60,000?
$51,000.
Right there. So $100,000 really isn't that much greater.
But I mean, we have to wake up to this concept of how could you possibly live a fulfilling life on $51,000? Well, I run a series of math problems that tell us that at $100,000, there's not much of you know, anything left over. And then I even go so far as to say, look at the millionaire myth, right? I mean, if you have a million, think about it. If you have $1 million saved up right now and you want to be conservative about that, you put in tax-free municipal bonds. Tax-free munis will pay roughly 3% right now. So on $1 million saved, at 3% tax-free, you're living off of
$30,000. Yeah.
Now, the average person is going to pull in somewhere around $1,600 in Social Security. So you add 3,000, call it 30,000 is 2,500. Add it, you're somewhere less than $4,500 a month.
Around $50,000 figure again.
Now, is that Paris in retirement? I mean, are you renting a villa in Tuscany like you dreamed about? I mean, you don't have a second home at the beach.
You're getting by.
You're barely getting by. So what are you doing? You're living in scarcity. And the argument in my book is it's time for us to take money from being pushed under the carpet, drop it right on the kitchen table, and let's start talking about
it. Not only that, you used the word scarcity. It's in this world today, there is a tremendous amount of abundance. If you focus on it, look for it, and do what you have to do.
Look, I'm saddened by the fact of so many people who don't understand what you just said. There is more abundance in the world today than there ever has been before, and it has never been easier to get it. Look at this guy, Casey Neistat. You know who he is?
I don't.
He's the YouTube vlogger. Casey Neistat just sold his company for $25 million to CNN. 4 years ago, he didn't have a follower. He didn't have much of a career. And today, he has 6 million followers on YouTube.
Starting from nothing.
From zero with a camera and just made $25 million. And yet, young people today and middle-aged people, boomers, what have you, will still find reasons why they can't do it. Why they can't make it, why they can't get their piece of the American pie, and a guy like Casey Neistat said, I'm going to get mine, and he did it with almost no startup capital and an idea. And yet, so many people fill their brains with reasons why they can't. It's an epidemic.
It apparently is. Well, you have a few other companies, too. One that I'm interested in is yourcredit101.com. Tell us about that, and is it just for commercial vehicle owners?
It's credit repair for truckers, because I want to give truckers who have bad credit a chance to fix it and get better. It's a small business for us. It's an ancillary business for us. The goose that lays the golden egg around here is commercial fleet. That is the machine. The other business is the EquipPost, which is the dealer and the auction platform. And the credit repair business are both ancillary fillers. The reality is it's always difficult when you turn a customer down because of credit reasons. And most companies will just turn it down and never think twice about it. We want to give the guy a chance to fix it.
You're going to get in the boat with them and help them along
the way. It's a highly subsidized program by Commercial Fleet. The maximum a customer would pay is $699 to get their credit from soup to nuts fixed. To the best of, you know, you have to play by the rules on it. But it's an ancillary sale for us. But it's important from our selling strategy of being able to give the customer an alternative that says, I cannot finance you, but I do have an option for you. And so it's not a big profit center for us, but we certainly like the cultural aspect of being able to say, here's how we turn you down.
You have a number of businesses. You were primarily in the commercial fleet financing business, which is the name of your business. Tell everybody how they can get a hold of you and also find out more about your philosophy via your new book.
Yeah. So the book, I Need More Money, comes out in Q4 of this year. There'll be heavy social media push on that. I can be followed on social media at Matt Monero anywhere. My company, Commercial Fleet, can be found at cffnationwide.com or Commercial Fleet. Just type in Commercial Fleet Financing on YouTube or Google. You'll see over 1,000 videos on our YouTube channel. I mean, the level of transparency I think that we take our businesses is pretty extreme. And while at some points it freaks people out, the reality is transparency is the new commodity. It is the new currency. It is the way people communicate.
And everybody can also get that information off of our website, playmakerstalkshow.com. This has been a terrific show. We just spoke with Matt Monero. Matt, thank you very much for being on Playmakers Talk Show. You definitely are a playmaker.
Thank you, Steve. Pleasure to have you here.
Thanks also to our listeners for joining us. Join us again at playmakerstalkshow.com, where you can get all of our replays and past episodes. That's playmakerstalkshow.com, and we're going to be back with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join Steve again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com for more interviews with interesting and successful playmaking CEOs and executives.